All right, guys. It's good to be back. Let's jump in 2 Samuel chapter 17. 2 Samuel 17. I hope that's the one we own because that's the one I studied anyway. So, and of course, Jacob reads through these chapters, and that's a great song he picked out. I'm assuming you're the one that done it. Because as we're reading through this, you'll see David. You know, what a friend we have in Jesus. David has friends who betray him. You know, we'll read that. David also has friends who risk their life for him. You know, but yet even that, it's only a fraction of the friend we have in Jesus. Only a fraction. Good song. Good song selection, Jacob. And I hate to say this on the heels of Todd's message this morning about the parable of the sowers, but I was actually a little bit, I couldn't get motivated this week. And I actually sent a text. I said, man, I just can't. I'm having a hard time getting into 2 Samuel. It's nothing about the text. It's just me. You know, I can't get excited. Pray that the Lord will stir me up to study. And Jacob, of course, responds back. Man, Brian, in chapter 17, you've got espionage. You know, you have a spy. You have good versus evil. You have deception. You have death. You have the eve of a battle. You have suspense. You have these spies or these secret messengers that barely escape with their life to give the secret message to David. Even you can't make this boring. And I thought about that. I mean, he's right. But, you know, if this was any other book, we wouldn't put it down. You know, if this was a Tom Clancy novel, or I think he's an author, if it was one of those books, people would just be so eager to turn to the next chapter and see what's going on, but we just read 17. When 17's over, we shut the book. We're not worried about what happened to Amasa, the one who leads the revolt against David, or the commander of, you know, Absalom's army. We don't really care what happens. We don't care what happens to Shimeah, the one who cursed David. This is funny how all these things we read when it comes to this book, we're so quick to put it down. But any other book, we'll pick it up and just can't put it down, so to speak. But as we're in chapter 17, we need to kind of just get a little bit of background because it's been a couple weeks since we've been here. And in chapter 12, David had been the king for some time. And he had committed a sin with Bathsheba, an affair with Bathsheba, and actually had her husband Uriah murdered. And God told him in chapter 12, verse 11, "Behold, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house." That ends up being Absalom. "And I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all of Israel and before the sun." We saw that fulfilled last week, or the last chapter 16. And so Absalom here has rebelled against his father, trying to snatch the kingdom away from David is what he's trying to do. And this goes all the way back to 15. We kind of see this whole thing start building. Absalom had went to his father David and asked for, "Could I go and offer a sacrifice in Hebron?" David gives him permission to go. He goes with several hundred men. And when he gets there, he decides to instigate his revolt. David hears about it. It starts in chapter 15, verse 18. Verse 13, messengers came to David. "The hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom." So David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, let us flee, or else there will be no escape for us from Absalom." So they all abandon ship. They all leave Jerusalem. They get to verse 18 here in chapter 15. "All David's servants passed by him, all the Cherethites, all the Peliathites, and 600 Gittites who had followed him from Gath. They passed before the king." In verse 23, "And all the land wept as the people passed by." So you have them leaving Jerusalem, going down, because Jerusalem was up on a mount. They left Jerusalem, they're going down the hill, they're crossing that Kidron Valley, and when they get down to the bottom, right before they cross the little brook, you have Abiathar, in verse 24, one of the priests, and Zadok, one of the other priests, come to David with the ark. And David says, no, take the ark back. Take the ark back. If the Lord finds pleasure in me, He will bring me back. If He has no pleasure in me, then He will do what seems good to Him. So He sends them back, and He tells them, look, you have your sons with you. I want you, your sons, Ahimaaz and Jonathan, your sons, use them to relay any messages to me. So David's starting to set up some little, intel in what's going on. I want to know what's going on. So keep me fresh on what's going on. So David crosses the brook in verse 30. He starts climbing the Mount of Olives, and he's weeping as he went. He's barefoot with his head covered, and all the people who were with him were covered their heads, and they all went up weeping as they went. And then it was told to David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And see, Ahithophel was one of David's closest advisors. This is a friend that betrayed him. So David prayed, O Lord, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. And then he gets to the top of the hill in verse 32. He's at the top of the hill. He has a guy named Hushai, the Archite, came to meet him. And he saw David as he was barefoot with his head covered. And David sends him back and tells him, I want you to go and I want you to overturn the counsel of Ahithophel. That's what I would like for you to do. And being a friend of David, he does that very thing at his, you know, at the risk of his own life. As David leaves that mount, he's going down the other side, and as he goes down the other side, he meets Ziba, you know, who was Mephibosheth's servant. And at this point, all he knows is Mephibosheth has betrayed him. Someone that he was very good to. He showed extreme kindness to Mephibosheth, and at this point, he thinks Mephibosheth has betrayed him. Then he goes on down the mountain a little bit more, and he comes to a city called Bahurim in verse 5 of chapter 16. And when he gets there, he meets a man named Shimeah. And in verse 7, Shimeah started cursing at David. Get out, you man of blood, you worthless man. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you've reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into your hand of your son, Absalom. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood. So all this, and all this seems to really take place in one day. You know, from he gets the message, he leaves, and he runs into all this trouble on the way. And in verse 15, we have Absalom. As David's leaving, Absalom seems to be coming in right behind him, coming into Jerusalem right behind him. And when he gets there, he sees Hushai the Archite, David's friend. And he starts questioning him, you know, I thought your loyalty was to your friend. Speaking of David. He says, no. For whom the Lord and his people and all the men of Israel have chosen, his I will be, and with him I will remain. So he's kind of pledging his allegiance to Absalom at this point. And in verse 20 of chapter 16, Absalom goes to Ahithophel, the chief counselor of David, his father, and says, look, give your counsel. What shall we do? And Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house, and all of Israel hear that you have made yourself a stench to your father, and the hands of all who are with you will be strengthened. So he pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. So you see, what all transpired here, when David woke up basically on the morning of chapter 15, when he woke up, he was still king. Later that day, he was alarmed of the rebellion of his son Absalom. He was forced to flee Jerusalem with his family and his friends in tow. He left behind the ark. He left behind the priest. He left behind his friend Hushai. And I probably said that three different ways, but anyway. And as he went, he was weeping as he went. You know, he was being betrayed by his own son Absalom. He was betrayed by a friend in Ahithophel. He felt as though he was betrayed by Mephibosheth. He was cursed by Shimeah. His son at this point had laid with his concubines in the sight of all Israel, and now they were planning an attack on him. Now this was a bad day. So think about that, I guess. Sometimes when you come home and, man, I just had a bad day. I told them I didn't want no onions on my hamburger, and they just put them on there anyway. You know, some of the things that we let kind of just bother us, that is nothing. This is a bad day. a very bad day. So when we get to chapter 17, we're going to have Absalom getting counsel from two different men. He's going to get counsel from Ahithophel, and he's going to get counsel from Hushai. And so when we start, I want to just start in verse 23 of chapter 16, and I'll read all the way down through 17, verse 4. Now in those days, the counsel that Ahithophel gave was as if one consulted the word of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel esteemed both by David and by Absalom. Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men, and I will rise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and discouraged and throw him into a panic. And all the people who are with him will flee. I will strike down only the king, and I will bring all the people back to you as a bride comes home to her husband. You seek the life of only one man, and all the people will be at peace." And the advice seemed right in the eyes of Absalom and in all the elders of Israel. So, you see Ahithophel's advice, whose advice was as if one consulted with the word of God. His advice was, "I'm going to rise and I'm going to pursue David tonight, this very night." That was his advice. And he was going to take 12,000 men. Now, most people think at this point David probably had around 1,000 men who had followed him, maybe even less than that. So he was going to be clearly outnumbered. At least Ahithophel was wise enough to ask for a sizable army, you know, with 12,000 men. And the plan is to overtake them while they are weary, while they're exhausted. Strike them while they're in shock. Strike them while they're on the run, while they're tired and while they're weary. And to be honest, this is sound advice. David was exhausted and tired. We see that at the end of this chapter 17, because when he gets to where he's going, there's men who bring food, because it says your men are hungry and weary and thirsty. So David was weary. He was in complete shock at what had happened. This had been a long, bad day. But he wanted to go and strike now. He wanted to do it before they had time to regroup. Before he had time to kind of gather some support. That's what Ahithophel was suggesting. And he wanted to strike then only David. David alone. Ahithophel was going to only strike David. There may be some collateral damage, but the plan was a precision attack on David. And it says in verse 4, and this is the New American Standard, it said the plan pleased Absalom and all the elders of Israel. The plan to kill the king. The plan to kill David, their king, earlier that morning or yesterday. That's the plan they were. It pleased them. This is the path forward. And I thought about this as I'm reading something we take for granted in America is what's called the peaceful transition of power. Now, we may fuss sometimes when the Democrats become the power and they give it to Republicans, so the Republicans are in power and then the Democrats take the power. But that's still a peaceful transition of power compared to what some things we read here and some things that go on in the world today. When there was a coup that rose up like Absalom did here, and you're on the wrong side of it, your life's on the line. You know, if you side with David and David loses, more likely you're going to die. You side with Absalom and David wins. So, I mean, the way in America our power is transitioned from one party to the next, even though sometimes it doesn't seem peaceful, we've got it made compared to what these guys had to deal with. So then we see verse 5. Absalom said, "Okay, all this advice seems good. This seems right. It's pleased me." But verse 5 says, then Absalom said, "Call Hushai the Archite and let us hear what he has to say." So that's a little bit interesting, isn't it? I wonder why honestly he didn't ask for Hushai's advice when Ahithophel said, "Go into your father's concubines." He didn't ask for anybody else's advice there, did he? I don't know why. When it came to having a relation with David's concubines, he didn't ask for a second opinion. I don't know if it's because it just fed his lust, fed his ego. Maybe it's what he wanted to hear. But here, he's wanting a second opinion. We know why. We'll get to why he asked for a second opinion later on. It's clear. But here, he's going to ask for a second opinion from a man named Hushiah the Archite. Now, we're told in 1 Chronicles that Ahithophel was the king's counselor. We read that here. But Hushiah was the king's friend. Hushiah the Archite was the king's friend. And he comes to him in verse 6. When Hushiah came to Absalom, Absalom said to him, "Thus has Ahithophel spoken. Shall we do as he says? If not, speak." So he doesn't just bring Hushiah in and ask him the same thing he asked Ahithophel. Back in chapter 16:20, he just asked Ahithophel, "Give your counsel, what shall we do?" But when it comes down here to Hushiah the Archite, he tells him exactly what Ahithophel says. He says, "Hey, look, Ahithophel said this. He said, thus and thus he has spoken. Do you think we should do that? If not, what do you think we should do?" For some reason, he asked for a second opinion. He tells Hushiah exactly what Ahithophel told him to do. Which is a little bit odd if you look at it that way. And then Hushiah is fixing to give his counsel. So I'll read on. Verse 7. Then Hushiah said to Absalom, "This time the counsel of Ahithophel has given is not good." Hushiah said, "You know that your father and his men are mighty men, and that they are enraged like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Besides, your father is an expert in war. He will not spend the night with the people. Behold, even now he has hidden himself in one of the pits or in some other place. And as soon as some of the people fall at the first attack, whoever hears of it will say there's been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom. Then even the valiant men whose heart is like the heart of a lion will utterly melt with fear. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and that those who are with him are valiant men. But my counsel is that all of Israel be gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba, as the sand by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person, so that we all come upon him in some place where he may be found. And we shall light upon him as a dew falls on the ground. And of him, and of all the men who are with him, not one will be left. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel will bring ropes to that city, and we shall drag it into the valley, until it's not even a pebble is to be found there." And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "The counsel of Hushiah the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. For the Lord has ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, so that the Lord might bring harm to Absalom." So, Hushiah's counsel, he's going to paint slightly a different picture of what's going on here. You know, he starts in verse 8, you know. He says, this time the advice isn't good. You know, Absalom, you know that your father and his men are mighty. And he said that they are enraged. Now, they're not necessarily enraged. You know, if you look at what's going on, when Hushiah met David on the top of the mountain, David was bawling. David was weeping, barefoot with his head covered. But Hushiah is just painting a different story, as if they're just angry, ready to fight. And they are mighty men, but they're in shock. Shock, panic, tired, weeping. And then he says, look, he's hidden himself in one of the caves or in one of the pits. That could be caves in verse 9. You know, but when we get to verse 16, it's going to show David actually, and Hushiah knows this, he's actually in the plains by the Jordan River. So he's not actually in the caves as Hushiah is mentioning here. And he says, look, you know, what will happen if one of the people fall at first attack? They will say there's a slaughter, which that's possible, just one or two people fall and all of a sudden it's a slaughter. And because the reports can be exaggerated, if you remember a couple of chapters back, when Absalom has struck Amnon, news came back that said Absalom has struck down all the king's sons. And not one of them is left. And that was far from the truth because Absalom had only struck down one son, Amnon. But reports can be false and reports can be exaggerated. I think he knew that. And it would kind of make the people's heart melt when this happened. He says, look, you know, you and all of Israel know your father's reputation. And then he says, but my counsel is this. My counsel is that all of Israel be gathered to you from Dan to Beersheba as a sand by the sea for a multitude. Now, Dan was the farthest north part of Israel. And Beersheba was as far south as you get. So what he's really saying, from the north to the south, you need to get all of Israel. Now, what this was going to do, this was going to take time. And that's all David needed. David needed time to get to where he was going, to regroup, to find some allies, and he would be fine. And Hushai, that's all he's fighting for here is just time. And when he offers this advice, it buys David the time he needs. You need to go get this big army, and you need to go in battle in person. Why let Ahithophel get all the glory? Because earlier Ahithophel was saying, I will take 12,000 men. I will strike David. I will bring all the people back to you. Don't let Ahithophel have the glory. You do it, King Absalom. You lead this massive army against David. You do it. Now you got to realize too that this was playing on Absalom's ego. And he had an ego. You know, this was also the man who was praised for his handsome appearance, who would let his hair grow out all year long and cut it once a year and would take it up there in the public square, so to speak, and just weigh his hair. You know, so he had an ego. And you know, Hushai is kind of stroking his ego. So you get this massive army and you lead them, King. And he buys it. You know, Hushai even begins to insert in verse 12, the we shall come upon him in some place where he'll be found. We shall light upon him as a dew. Sort of giving the illusion of his loyalty. We shall light upon him as a dew falls on the ground. You see the picture that's painting, you know, when you wake up in the morning and there's this dew all over the ground, it just seemed to happen overnight. Suddenly, and it covers everything. That's the way we're going to be. We're going to gather an army, you're going to lead it, and we're going to light on him like the dew of the ground. And Ahithophel is also saying that he was only going to strike down David. Hushai is suggesting that we teach them all a lesson. You know, follow the new king or be considered a traitor. So what does it say? Verse 13. No, verse 12. So we come upon him in some place where he'll be found, and we shall light upon him as a dew falls on the ground, and of him and of all the men who are with him, not one will be left. We will teach them all a lesson if they don't follow you, Absalom. Again, this is what he's wanting to hear. And if he goes into a city, all of Israel will bring ropes and will drag the whole city into the valley. That's what he needed to hear. Therefore, Absalom said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. That's what Absalom and all the men of Israel bought into Hushai's advice, his counsel over that of Ahithophel's. Now, the reason for this, the reason he asked for advice from Hushai, is given in right here in verse 14. For the Lord had ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. That's why he asked for it. This was God's sovereign will, so that the Lord might bring harm to Absalom. So when you're wondering, why did he ask for this? Why did he do that? This is why. So we move on. I'll read 15. Then Hushai spoke to Zadok, to Abiathar, the priest. Thus and so did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel. And thus and so have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, do not stay tonight at the fords of the wilderness, but by all means pass over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz were waiting at Enrogel. A female servant was to go and tell them, and they were to go and tell King David, for they were not to be seen entering the city. But a young man saw them and told Absalom. So both of them went away quickly and came to a house of a man at Bahurim, who had a well in his courtyard, and they went down into it, and the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and scattered grain on it, and nothing was known of it. When Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, "Where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" And the woman said to them, "They have gone over the brook of water." And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. They returned from seeking after them and returned back to Jerusalem. Now we know, because we're told, that the Lord was going to defeat the council of Ahithophel. We know that in verse 14. But Hoshea does not know that. And so, and we can kind of tell by his advice, the message he sends in verse 15 is, "Thus and so did Ahithophel cancel Absalom, and thus and so have I canceled." So he told them to send the message back to David, "This is what Ahithophel told him, and this is what I told him. So prepare for the worst." He gave David all the information he had, and he warned the men in verse 21 to arise and go over the water, for Ahithophel canceled against you. Because you got to go over there tonight, because Ahithophel was going to pursue them tonight. And I don't think Hoshea knew whose advice he was going to take. So David gave all the information. So David is giving all the information that he had and warned to prepare for Ahithophel's advice and to be preferred by Absalom. And it says that he had some men who, this Jonathan and Ahimaaz, were waiting at En-Rogel. And the reason I think they waited there is because if they were in Jerusalem and they would have got this advice, they would have left Jerusalem going to meet David, they would have been noticed. So they stayed in En-Rogel. In En-Rogel, there was a well. And women going to get water over the course of the day to get, you know, from the well was common. So they sent this female servant to the well at En-Rogel, who was going to give the message to the servants there, to Jonathan and Ahimaaz there. And then they were going to leave. That way they wouldn't be seen leaving the city. You see? But they're noticed. And when they're noticed, they run. It says they flee and they come to a house of a man in Bahurim who had a well in his courtyard. And they kind of get down in the well. They spread this cloth over the top of it. They put grain on it. Then when they come looking for them, they say, "Look, they're gone." Similar to Rahab the harlot. You know, similar to, I guess, the Pharaoh, how the women had did in Pharaoh's case, you know, where they had hid or concealed Moses there. You kind of see the same thing here. But it's interesting, too, because sometimes we're bad about painting everybody with a broad brush. And if we would have read, which we did read, chapter 16, when the king came to Bahurim, there was a man named Shimeah who was cursing David, hated David. But here, it seems like there is at least some people in Bahurim who are friends of David, who are harboring these spies, right? You know, because this is the same town that the guy was from who was throwing stones and dirt at David, saying, "Get out of here, you cursed. Get out of here, you cursed." Here they're protecting these spies from Absalom. And when the men cannot find them, they leave. Okay? So, we're going to get on in verse 21. After they had gone, the men came up out of the well and went and told King David. They said to David, "Arise and go quickly over the water, for thus and so has Ahithophel counseled against you." I think they were still unsure on whose advice they would take. Then David arose and all the people who were with him, and they crossed the Jordan River. By daybreak, not one was left who had not crossed the Jordan. Verse 23, when Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his donkey and went off home to his own city. He set his house in order and hanged himself, and he died and was buried in the tomb of his father. So Ahithophel saw that his advice wasn't taken. Decides to go home, set his affairs in order. You know, maybe, I guess what we would call a will, kind of going and hand out who's going to have what, and he went and hung himself. Now he was wise enough, I believe Ahithophel was wise enough to understand that the delay in gathering an army would give David the time, the strength, and the support he needed to defeat Absalom. And he saw that David would win this battle and Absalom's rebellion would fail. And at that point, he would have chosen the wrong side and he would be murdered for his treason. I think that's the purpose behind it. Now, many people will say Ahithophel was the Judas of the Old Testament. And it is interesting, if you read Psalms 41, if you want to turn there. Psalms 41, David is crying out about this very thing. Psalms 41. I'll read verses 4 and down. As for me, I said, O Lord, be gracious to me. Heal me, for I've sinned against you. My enemies say of me in malice, when will he die and his name perish? And when one comes to see me, he utters empty words, while his heart gathers iniquity. When he goes out, he tells it abroad. All who hate me whisper together about me. They imagine the worst for me. They say a deadly thing is poured out on him. He will not rise again from where he lies. Even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted his heel against me. But you, O Lord, be gracious to me and raise me up that I may repay them. So it's interesting that he wrote this. Most people think he's referring to Ahithophel when he says this in Psalms 41. If people say that this does, he is the Judas of the Old Testament, one reason they may say it is Jesus quotes this exact same psalm when he's referring to Judas. He does this in John 13, John 13, verse 18. This is Jesus when he's going to, kind of openly call out the betrayer. I'll back up to 16. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you who do them. I'm not speaking of you all. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. Psalm 41. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, so that when it does take place, you will believe that I am he. So that's when he gave the bread to Judas Iscariot. So that's why people, one of the reasons people may say that Ahithophel was the Judas of the Old Testament. Okay, so they've crossed the river. None of them is left on this side of the river. They're all on the east side of the river. And Ahithophel has done hung himself at this point. Verse 24, David came to Maanaim, and Absalom crossed the Jordan with all the men of Israel. So Absalom's right behind him. He crosses the Jordan, and Absalom had set Amasa over the army instead of Joab. Amasa was the son of a man named Ithra, the Ishmaelite, who had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zeruah, Joab's mother. And Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. Okay, I'm going to read this last passage right here, 27 to the end of the chapter. When David came to Maanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Masher, the son of Amiel from Lodabar, and Barzilla, the Gileadite from Rogelim, brought beds, basins, earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds and sheep and cheese from the herd for David and the people who were with him to eat, for they said the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So here we see David really getting help from unlikely places. Once David's crossed the Jordan, he goes to Mahanaim, and he gets help from these unlikely places. Now, I guess if I were to, I know y'all would probably give out, but if I was to give you a pop quiz on, does any of these names ring a bell? They should. Some of these should ring a bell. Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites. Okay? You remember Nahash was the king of the Ammonites, and he died. He had a son named Hanun. And David sends men to console Hanun over the death of his father, saying, his father Nahash was good to me, I'm going to be good to you. And that's when they cut the robes in half and kind of humiliate them and send them off. And kind of spurs the whole war, where they end up having to resort back to their town in Rabbah and camp out, right? And that's where David has sent Joab, and that's where Uriah was murdered, was in Rabbah. But it seems like David, that Sheba right here, this Shobi, is the son of Nahash. He may be the one who they placed, once they put Hanun and all the Ammonites to rest, David may have set Shobi up to kind of run that territory. It seems, I mean, you see that through Scripture. So it's more likely what he done here. So this Shobi was the son of Nahash, probably more likely the brother of Hanun, who humiliated David's men. And, all right, do y'all recognize this? Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. Is that ringing a bell to anyone? All right, well, when David was looking for Mephibosheth, when he was looking for a descendant of Saul, they said, you know, there is one Saul of Jonathan, a man named Mephibosheth. And he asked, you know, where is this Mephibosheth? And he was being housed in this man named Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. He was the one who had housed and taken care of Mephibosheth. Okay? So this is, it's just interesting how these things come back alike. And this Barzillai, I don't think he's mentioned before now, but he's going to be mentioned later on. I think he's about an 80-year-old man who's very wealthy. David's going to ask him after this battle, won't you come to Jerusalem with me? And he goes, I'm 80. I'm not going to go with you. I'm going to stay here. So anyway, David gets, and if you look on a map, these little towns, Rabbah, Lodabar, Manam, all this is well east of the Jordan River. And so he's getting help, like I said, from people who aren't really, I guess, who you wouldn't have thought he would have gotten help from. He got help from these unlikely people. They brought food and they even brought beds so that he could rest, you know, comfortably. And so this is exactly what David needs. You see the very next verse in chapter 18, what's it say? Remember, he left with probably about 1,000 people, so they think. When he gets over here in chapter 18, verse 1, David mustered the men who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. So David's army, he had regrouped. He had a sizable army at this time, and he had chosen the battleground in probably something he was going to be way familiar with, and he was a well-seasoned warrior compared to Absalom. So this, when it said the Lord desired to bring harm upon Absalom, is fixing to happen. And it happened at Hushai the Archite, being a loyal friend of David, risking his life to, you know, debunk the counsel of Ahithophel. So I know it's a lot of names, a lot of places. Jacob said I couldn't even mess that up, but I believe I did. So y'all got the book. Y'all go read it yourself. If you would, please stand. Ms. Park, would you?